listening to a podcast of The View, where we discuss today's topics from an anti-racist, anti-oppressive, multicultural perspective. This podcast is brought to you by the Church of the Larger Fellowship. To subscribe, visit questformeaning.org or search for Church of the Larger Fellowship in the iTunes Store.
Another stunning beginning to a show with The View. Sorry, y'all. Zoom has just been funky lately. We think the latest upgrade was an upgrade to hell. But anyway, hello. It's great to be here with you. I'm Meg Riley. Today I'm in Nashville, Tennessee, which is fun. I'm going to drive over later after the show to Asheville, North Carolina, where I'm going to talk to the folks at the church about CLF's prison ministry. Antonia, where are you?
I am here in Wilmington, Delaware. It doesn't look as pretty out as it does behind you, Meg. The trees are pretty, you know, they're getting to the brownish part of the changing of the colors, and it's really not cold, but it's cool today and kind of dreary. So I'm just here in the warm house, thankful. I would say that I'm going to be the person to be putting your questions in. I'll see if I can see them on Facebook. But if not, we have Margalee with us. Remember Margalee? Hi, Margalee. Where are you?
Hello, hello. Wow. It's been a while since I've been in one of these little Zoom of The View squares. So I'm so glad to be here. I am coming to you from Westport, Connecticut. I'm in my office, the church office today. So glad to be here. I will help with tech, hopefully. That won't be much for me to do. And I have also been having a little bit of technical difficulties. So if I disappear, I'll come right back. So to you, Jennifer.
Hello, I'm Jennifer Johnson. This is my first time on The View, so I'm excited and honored to be here. I'm tuning in from my home in Franklin, Massachusetts, where it is a gray and windy day, but the sky is kind of silver and the blowing leaves look really beautiful against it.
So our other hosts, we have Aisha Hauser and Christina Rivera are at the Lareda meeting, where it sounds like they're doing really exciting work that we'll want to talk about when they're back. And Michael Tino is in Ohio? I don't know why Michael's in Ohio, but at a ministerial study group talking about the Harlem Renaissance. So it'll be fun to talk to everyone when they get back. Meanwhile, today we are going to talk about something very near and dear to all of us, because everyone else is gone, why don't we? Church of the Larger Fellowship Learning Fellows Program. And so you see before you three Learning Fellows, and you've seen, if you've been a View Watcher, you've seen many Learning Fellows before here. So we're going to talk about that. But first, let's talk. Three of us here were just at the Black Lives UU Symposium, which was in St. Paul last week. And if you didn't see that show, I really commend it to you. We got to speak to many, many people, elders and brand new people. And it just was a wonderful conversation. Super moving to me. I'll just start. I was really grateful that Blue opened this up to people of all races. It was a huge gift and a risk for them because sadly, often that doesn't go well. It did go well, I think. I didn't hear of any horrible things that happened, which maybe I didn't hear about them, but it really seemed like a really deep bonded community. We were all so graciously and radically welcomed. I really loved the way kids were invited to be full present participants and not shushed and pushed off to the side. The respect for the elders was deeply moving to me, including Adele Smith Penniman, who gave the last sermon, who I knew decades ago, and it wasn't easy. She was the second Black woman to go through the fellowship committee, the first to get what was then final fellowship. And she was amazing. And it just felt so good to me to see a room full of people just cherishing her as I wish she could have always been cherished. How about you, Margalee? You're not muted, so I'm going to start with you. How was it for you to be there?
Yeah, and I'm going to start with Reverend Adele. And it was intentional that we chose her. And then if you notice, the other minister who spoke, so she was the second Black woman UU minister to be ordained. And then our second preacher, a minister, was the newest ordained minister, newly minted on the Saturday before the symposium. So, that was unintentionally. But yes, having done.
So, Margalee, were you part of the plan? I didn't know you were part of planning that service.
Oh, yes. Yes.
Well, what about that? What a good service you planned. I didn't even know that.
Thank you. And I was part of the worship team. There were, I want to say, five of us on it, and including Reverend Kimberly Quinn Johnson, who was the coordinator of the worship team. But yeah, all three services, the spiritual groundings and the main service, yes. Yeah, it was really wonderful being there and also being part of the planning. For me, when the planning is happening is when I'm anxious. Once it starts, it's like, to me, it takes a life of its own. Whatever we didn't do just didn't get done. It's just going to happen. And I'm more relaxed when something is happening than before. So it was really good. And also having been part of Blue Events, where it's all Black space, and then having Blue Event where it's also non-Black folks, was really, really interesting. And I do know, at least by one of the questions that was asked, some Black folks missed having the Black space, or Black sacred space, as we usually call it. But I think the difference, though, is this was a symposium, and specifically on theology. And I remember right after the first symposium, I was like, oh my gosh, this would be beneficial to every UU minister, really. I mean, I was sitting there and then hearing the author, Chris Cameron, speak about the history that Black UUs, Black freethinkers had, the influence they had on the faith. It was, really good. And I'd met him before because he spoke at one of our classes at Meadville. But to just hear him talk about this book that's just got published, and I can't remember the name of it here. And then if somebody can remember it and can.
Black Freethinkers. You can get it on Amazon and in bookstores. It is so good.
Yeah. So it was really good being there. I enjoyed every second of it. It's like will we have more things with everybody included, or will we have things that are just Black sacred space? Maybe we have room for both. And I believe that was one of the things we said actually toward the end when the question was asked about that. So I know Tonya, you were there. What was your experience like?
Yes, I'm Antonia. Even though Margalee calls me Tonya, she can, but I'm Antonia. I was there, and it was my first Blue experience. I was moved by Reverend Adele. Something that I found so excruciatingly painful, and at the same time hopeful and a call to me to just keep going, was when Reverend Adele was speaking, when she was preaching about all of the trials and tribulations she's been through and how poorly she was treated and received. I was sitting very near Black seminarians and a newly minted Black UU minister, and we all were just weeping because we've experienced some of those things already, and we look into the future and we can see those things. And I just was struck that this is what, 50 something years later, less than, 40 years later.
Did she say 1970s? I know, but I.
Oh, 40 something years later, and we're still experiencing those same issues. And for me as a Black queer person, my biggest question is, where will I be accepted in a UU congregation? Because seminary, you know, it's not cheap, and this is my calling. So what will that be like? And to hear some of the other elders talking about, like, that was the question when Black ministers became ordained, or, you know, where will they be accepted or became fellowship? What congregation will want them? So that was something that struck me to be so painful. And seeing the elders be there and seeing, you know, Blue has done so much in our UU spaces to create space and keep space and demand space for Black UUs. And so to be able to see an elder stand up and say, I've been waiting for this for 50 years, just, I still feel emotional when I think about that, all the work that happened before us and all the work that there is still to do, and also being in a room with people who are pretty courageous to come into that space and to hear that, you know, this is not going to be about you, and this is an opportunity for you to learn and grow. And I actually was amazed that that's what seemed to happen. So, like, to a person, which I was shocked and very pleased. So that was some of my experience. Oh, and the theology. I was thinking the same thing, Margalee. Like, every person should experience this. We don't talk about theology enough, I believe, in UU spaces. And it was so life-affirming and so filling for me. Yeah. And I don't think you mentioned everything you do with Blue, Margalee. I think you left something out.
I wanted to say, we kept saying the second minister, and not saying her name is Yudini. And then the reason I didn't want to say Yudini is that I didn't want to say your name incorrectly. I can see it in my head, but I didn't want to say your name incorrectly if you're listening. So the two ministers who preached for the large service on Saturday was Reverend Adele and Reverend Yadini. So I hope I'm pronouncing it right. Forgive me if I haven't. And Tonya can tell you how many times I've mispronounced her name. But with Blue, respond to Antonia's inquiry, is that I am currently a member of the organizing collective board with Blue, and I joined the board in August. So it hasn't been very long. So I'm the newest member of the board, and still, you know, figuring it out. And it's really been a great experience. And one of the things I think, in addition to it being a working board, one of the things that I think makes this particular group especially wonderful to work with is that once a month, the meeting, we meet every week, one of the meetings every month is specifically for spiritual care. We have a minister that comes in for that hour and provides spiritual care for us. And, you know, a deep check-in and whatever word the minister has for us is usually tied into whatever it is that we're dealing with at the moment. So yeah, I really appreciate that. So yeah, you know, I'm with the board, and I love Blue spaces. I think one of the things, being a UU, I feel like Blue spaces or spaces for that are specifically put in place for people of color, I really love being in those spaces. It's different. It really is. And I don't know, there's a larger freedom. There is a being able to just kind of be. And having said that, I want to add within, usually I think when people think of Black folks or people of color in general, automatically people switch to a monolith, right? We're but you could tell just in that room, we had a panel where it was a cross-sectionality of Black UUs, and it was everybody's story was so different. I remember I was sitting next to someone. I'm like, look at this, look at these, everyone up there, their story is so different. You had somebody who was like, I forgot how he referred to himself, but like he's UU, but pure Christian. And somebody who was like, who thought believing in God was so ridiculous, you know, on the same panel, and the people in between, the people who do, and then it was just, and I think that within those same spaces, there are differences, but at the same time, I think because we have a history of oppression, we can connect. There's a quick understanding. There's an ability to quickly translate how somebody's feeling or somebody else's experience. So I really appreciate those spaces. And I think I feel like I'm seen in those spaces much, much better. I don't think that I'm starting out with having to prove myself in those spaces. I think I'm already who I am, and it's for me to screw up whatever impression people have of me. When I feel that it's the other way around for me and larger UU spaces, I feel like I'm starting out having to prove myself, you know? So I think that's the comfort I feel in those spaces. And I would imagine many other Black folks and other people of color feel in those spaces.
I find it to be nurturing and challenging, because I find that in Black spaces, and not that Black spaces are monolithic, but especially in the blue space, there feels to be like this nurturing spirit. Everyone has this nurturing spirit. And also because there's not a sense of, you know, people stereotyping you as this thing, there's also space for people to feel very free to say, that thing that you said, I don't really agree with that thing. You want to talk to me more about that? Or the way you did that thing, yeah, I'm not sure that's going to be helpful. So at the same time, which I love, because I feel like it's one of the spaces that I get feedback from a place of just feedback and not from a place that's related to all of these intersections of who I am. So I love that. Amanda Thomas said that the space is freer for sure. And I definitely agree with her in that. I think it's interesting because you talked about the spiritual care that you receive at Blue, and it reminds me a lot of the theological reflections that we have as learning fellows at the CLF. And I would love for you to talk more about that, Jennifer. How do you experience
that? Hold on one moment. I want to stay with the symposium for one more minute
before we
transition, because I just want to say how it was for me as a white person to be there. What I noticed from the outside, so you all are talking about how it felt, was that there was an exhale in the bodies of people of color there that I realized I don't see very often, that there was just a full, relaxed exhale. And I thought, what does that take away from us that we as a larger faith? I think to me, you mentioned the heartbreak for the seminarians. I think for me, the moment was Dr. Leon Spencer, one of the three co-presidents for a while and a dedicated layperson. I've known Leon for 30 years and he's been doing this work, and he's been a UU, he said, for 54 years. And he said he finally felt like he could completely be in the room. And it just thought, here is a man who's given so sacrificially for so long, saying he finally feels like his whole self can be in the room. There's something profoundly broken here. You know, I mean, it was, you can watch his interview. I rewatched it. You know, I cried. I mean, this is not what a community of faith is living its mission. And so I think the blue very, very intentionally creates a space where people can be fully in their bodies. And I noticed in the worship experiences how embodied people were. And I thought about something on the online symposium that I watched that Blue did, that Sophia Betancourt said a year ago that really, or however long ago that was, that I've sat with a lot. She said, I wonder if white people don't want to be in their bodies because if they were, they would have to feel what they've done in the world. And I just have held that, you know, because I went from there, as many people did, to their home church the next day. We opened with the same song that the Saturday worship opened with, Love Will Guide Us. There was actually a great band, so the music itself was wonderful. And I looked out and like two people were moving and everyone else was just standing there. And I just thought, because I've always moved, you know, and I just thought, this is so lonely. When we're not in our bodies, it's just so lonely. And this is a congregation that's overwhelmingly white, you know? And so I feel like the gifts were not just intellectual gifts, which were very real, the speakers and what they said. But for me, the actual lived theology of being in that space is just such balm. For me as a white person, I can't even begin to guess how it is for Leon or Adele or, you know, these people who have been around for decades without receiving any balm back. And so it's, you know, it just, it's deeply, deeply moving to me and so needed, not just for people of color, but for the whole movement to understand what it is to be in a different kind of space. So I really needed to say that. I was quiet the whole time listening, but I really feel like white people were invited. And I think for one reason, you know, when we asked Dr. Dikia Nuramin, what do you wish people would take from here? She said, take what you've experienced and share it, push it out. And so I guess that's what I want to do. And it's weird because here we are in an online ministry, in an online congregation, talking about being fully embodied, right? So it's complicated as we move on and talk about the Learning Fellows. So Antonia, back to your question to Jennifer, which was a perfectly fine question.
You remember the question, Jennifer? I was riffing. I think it was something like Margalie talked about Blue has spiritual care in their board meetings, and I wanted to reflect on our own theological reflections that we have as Learning Fellows with the CLF. And as I asked the question again, I think that there are a few things that we haven't concreted to have this conversation, like what is a Learning Fellow? And what does that mean to have Learning Fellows at the CLF? And then we can get to that great question I asked. What do you think? Meg, you want to go?
Sure. I'll just say you're seeing three of the Learning Fellows now. I think there have been 28. And of course, before I was at CLF, there were many interns. And gradually we shifted from saying intern to Learning Fellow because we've had people who were done with seminary and already ordained who came. We've had people who didn't want to go to seminary. We've had religious educators. Lori Stone-Sertoski, who's now our tech director, came in as a Learning Fellow. So it's a program for people who want to practice faith in this unconventional setting, who are dedicated learners and practitioners, experimenters, and creators. And I would say every Learning Fellow has done it a little bit differently. Some have had real specialties, prison ministry, military ministry, you know, religious education, worship. This obviously is one of the portfolios someone always carries of providing, believe me, this hour that you see is a tiny bit of what it takes to have the view. So it's been a wonderful program, which started because we didn't have money to hire staff, but quickly realized that way beyond that, having a continual motion of learning going on fit us very well. That, and I know it's hard every time someone's leaving, I'm like, no, we'll never recover. And then the next amazing person comes in the door. I've just been blown away. That's right. I've just been blown away by the quality of people who show up. And we always have great applicants who we can't even choose. But the curiosity and the willingness to learn and experiment. And I see Amanda Thomas, I'd love to have a musician who is a learning fellow. I'll just say that. But anyway, you know, so yeah. Now on to Jennifer to talk about theological reflection of the CLF.
Sure. Yeah. Theological reflection is something that we do, the learning fellows and ministers on staff, I think twice a month, where Meg usually frames a question for us around faith and ministry. And when I was applying to be a learning fellow and learning about the experience and talking to other learning fellows, Margaret Lee, I'm going to out you here, but you had said that this, that theological reflection was your favorite part. And it's such a unique experience to have this time set aside with other learning people, other ministers in formation and experienced ministers to really dive into a relevant question. I feel like it's kind of at the heart and center of the learning experience. And it, is a way of being grounded, a way of deepening my own theological and moral grounding to go forward and do the work of ministry. And it's something I felt like wherever I go, I would love to bring this into, if I'm in a brick and mortar congregation, it gets lost and forgotten, and it's so at the center. So I'm just so enormously grateful for it. For me, I consider it one of my spiritual practices now that I know that twice a month I'm going to have this space in community, because I have practices that I do on my own, but this is a space in community. Where we're held in care and we hold each other in care. So I'm joining, it's among my very favorite things that I'm doing right now. So what about you, Antonia? You posed the question to me, but I'd love to hear what you think.
I just actually entered my first year of internship in brick and mortar congregation. And I have been, I want to say lucky because it feels, I've been fortunate to have a similar type of learning with my teaching pastor, which I really enjoy. I think that for me, theological reflection gives me that space to not only like be in my head and my heart and my spirit to see how I feel about things. It also gives me right away that kind of all of these different avenues and ways that people think that I've never thought of, and that gives me an opening to explore things more fully. I really love that about theological reflection. I also love how Meg and sometimes Lynn really center what's happening today, the thing in the moment, things that we may not like necessarily believe to put a theological lens on. Current events, things that are just happening in the CLF, things that are happening in the EUA. So being able to use that muscle to apply a theological lens to the thing, all of the things that we do, helps me to be more spiritually grounded and helps me to be able to define my theology more clearly. So I really love that about theological reflection. How about you, Margaret?
Well, as Jennifer said, that is my favorite part of being. Mentioned how Meg and Reverend Lynn Unger would take what is happening in the world at large and UU communities and so on. But I think in addition to that, what I also see happen is Meg will take what is happening with us I remember one particular session where I think Meg came in ready with a particular topic to discuss, but looking at us and after a check-in and how we responded, you know, everything was just turned around to address what was happening with us at the moment, which was really actually helpful. I think it gave us that space right then, right there to talk about what we were feeling, what we were thinking, and just kind of like, it was just, I think, a really deep conversation. And I think one of the reasons I think I especially love theological reflection so much is I think it's also a time where we get to be in community with one another. We get to know one another better. So I especially like that. But I also want to talk about some of the other things we do as learning fellows. For one thing, some of us, this is our ministerial internship that's attached to our seminary program. For others of us, this is something we do in addition to whatever else we're doing for our own learning and so on. And I'm one of those who this is for my own learning. And really, when I started at CLF, you may notice if we're online friends, Facebook friends, you hardly see me. I know somewhere in me, I seem to be resisting that. It's not that I don't like those spaces, but I get overwhelmed. I get there, 10 million things to go through. So all that to say, when I started at CLF, when it came to technology, I was a little bit behind. So as you can see, as you may be aware, there is this show that we help produce. We provide technical support. There's Sunday night worship that we also, there are different parts, technical, but in addition to that, the preaching and the other elements of worship that we do. We also put together Faith Rocket packets. So there are different things that we do. We have online covenant groups. The reason I wanted to mention all those things, because I remember a little while ago, Meg, you mentioned how here we are online talking about being in community, but it's amazing to me how in community you can be online, it's even when I did Sunday worship on a regular basis, there is this connection, and I don't know if it's how usually when I'm on the phone or on a Zoom online platform with someone, I kind of imagine what is going on with the person. And I don't know if that is why that is for me, but I feel really connected to people in that space. I really enjoy attending worship or do any of the other things we do online. Yes, maybe in person is the best thing, but it is certainly the next to best and sometimes equally good, because I think when you're in your own space, there's a freedom you have. Sometimes you forget that, there are others out there, but you're in your own space, you're comfortable. Therefore, I think you're more willing to be open and connect with people. So that has been my experience with some of the things we're doing. Currently, if you follow us, if you attend worship with us, you may not see me in that space as much, because I have moved over to the prison ministry side of CLF, which is something else as a learning fellow that we can do. I am working on the prison ministry side. And of course, as I mentioned, technology, I don't know why everybody won't use the same program. People use different programs. So of course, I have to learn those programs and then move forward. But everything I've done with CLF, I have loved, and it has been and will continue to be really such a worthy and life-changing experience. There are things that I can do now that I could not have imagined that I would be able to do until I started here at CLF. So.
I think for me as a Zennial, just in case you don't know what that is, a Gen Xer and a millennial, I'm just in that little bubble in between. This really marries both of my worlds. If you are Facebook friends with me, I am on Facebook a lot. Lots of times I'm doing little things with CLF stuff, and lots of times I'm doing like things with my friend stuff, or just kind of trying to see where the world is and getting ideas for sermons, truthfully. But something about CLF that touches me is that in worship, you start to see the same people and you start to know their story. And I believe that their story is richer than something I can collect in a coffee hour. I feel like because there's this separation between me looking at you in your eye and attending you in that way, it gives people more space to be open about who they are and what they're feeling. And so I have some deep connections to people who come to worship. And I think that it really helps our other program, our pastoral care, greatly, because we have an idea of who the people are. We have our coffee group. We have other groups that are online. So we're able to attend, I feel like we're able to attend in a different way and attend to people who would never, ever walk into church or into a congregation. I feel like we're also able to attend a wider swath of people. The people that I see in CLF, generally, the demographics are somewhat different than the people I would see at a brick and mortar church. And that makes me feel really good. I became a learning fellow because Margalee and Rodney told me that I should. And generally, I listen to those people. So, and I'm so glad I did. There are ways that we use technology here that are different than ways that I've used technology any other place. And I believe that it only enhances what we're doing in Unitarian Universalism to bring those things to brick and mortar congregations if we choose to do that. I want Jen to talk about Faith Rocket. I promise you I'm not gonna keep giving you an agenda when you speak. I don't mean to do that, but I am doing that and I apologize. I just think Jen is doing the things I used to do and I'm doing the things Margalee used to do. And so I have this affinity for what Jen is doing and I'm growing into the things that I'm doing. So that's what's happening. We don't just boss Jen around.
Well, I am the newbie, so I accept that place. But I'm going to hold on to Faith Rocket. I'm going to answer that. But I did want to jump in too and say, I mean, in addition to people who wouldn't walk into a brick and mortar church, I think we also welcome and give access to people who have walked in and haven't had the kind of welcome for a variety of reasons. And we know that there are issues in our congregations. And this is another opportunity for our faith to do to answer our call to be radically welcoming. So, I mean, that's real here and it's really moving and it happens in worship and covenant groups and social media spaces. And like Margalee, I'm a late adopter of technology and I can be kind of skeptical of technology, but it's here. And I love the way that CLF is like entering the arena and harnessing technology in ways that align with our UU values, a way to claim technology tools to build beloved community. I think that's what it's all about. And that's a big reason why I wanted to come here as someone who can be reluctant about technology to learn how to harness it for that vision. So So that's really exciting for me. So Faith Rocket, I think, is another way. It's a subscription program that CLF is involved with in partnership with Launchpad. So my role is really kind of curating some of the materials that go out to congregations. Worship theme materials includes videos and podcasts and sermons that we produce here at CLF and that also we have contributors to Quest. I think it's also another way to give access to lay-led congregations, to congregations, you know, to add capacity to congregations that are strained in terms of developing worship materials, and also to create dialogue between congregations by having shared themes. So, you know, it can be a challenge sometimes to make sure it feels like we're getting fresh materials out there. But one thing I love about Faith Rocket is the multimedia aspect of it, that we have podcasts, videos, social media, and, you know, written and spoken worship scripts. So, yeah, and it seems to be really well received, and we're trying to really listen to what subscribers need and respond and adapt the program to those needs.
I wanted to add something to what Antonia was saying about the intimacy that can come online. So our very first worship service online, which was, I don't know how many years ago, maybe 8 now, our theme was the big questions. And so our reflection question, we always have a question we ask that everybody answers, was, what big question are you wrestling with? And we pictured people saying, what happens when you die? Is there a God? And the very first person posted, why is my husband having an affair? And we were like, we're not in Kansas anymore. You know, I mean, and then the second person posted, why couldn't my mother love me? And I thought, these are things no one would ever say to someone sitting in the pew next to them. But the safety, as Margalie said, of being in your own home, having your own space, in a way, there's distance. Like one month, our theme was health and illness. And many people that month shared illnesses that they lived with, that of course I had no idea, which is probably refreshing for them actually, to not be identified immediately in any kind of way. We don't know unless people share who they are. And so, but because of that, I think people sometimes share much more than they would in a bricks and mortar setting. There's a lot of cues you can't get, physical cues, and you can't reach over and pat someone or, you know, ask them if they want a hug. But we do hugs with parentheses in worship. And, you know, that can feel good. It's amazing how good that can feel. But yeah, I just wanted to say that sometimes, and the other thing about worship that I'm always just delighted by is that often there are 5 or 6 countries represented there. And so you have people, I forget what our theme was when someone was talking about capitalism and debt, and somebody from, you know, a U.S. colony was just saying that, let me tell you what's happening where I live now, you know, and it was so useful to have that international, though that was U.S., but not a U.S. perspective that those of us in the 48 states ever hear. And so I really love that, the variety of people who come through for, as Jennifer said, a huge variety of reasons, including religious professionals, you know, and their families. And yeah, it's been a wonderfully diverse community, which is a source of huge, huge joy and sometimes heartbreak when you hear why people are with us, but often joy. I just wanted to interject that.
We are in our last 10 minutes, and I know that there was a letter that went out to people at the CLF, and I know that people have some feelings about it. I know I have feelings about it, and I wanted Rev Meg to be able to, I don't know, she can't make it better. She's going to leave, so. to just talk to us a little bit about that. Reverend Meg holds so much institutional knowledge about CLF, and I don't know what I want you to say. I just want you to say something there. Like, I want you to say something.
You know, there's just a time that comes, and I think the time has come for me to let some new leadership emerge, and I'm really excited to see what the nominating committee, I mean, the search committee and the board will come to on this. They're a wonderful bunch of folks, very creative, very open. If anybody watching has thoughts, reach out to them. They're going to be fabulous. And, you know, people are saying, what are you going to do? I know what I'm going to do right away. I'm I'll be retiring 3 months before the presidential election. I will be giving everything I've got, because last time I didn't, and I was really mad at myself because I believed the news. So I will be doing that right away, and then life will evolve. And I see that Mahesh reached out. Oh, Mahesh, I love you so much. Mahesh gave me this wonderful image right when I came to CLF, about CLF being like God. You could never know where CLF was. You couldn't see it. You couldn't touch it, but it was always right around the corner somewhere. And I just loved that image so much. So if somebody wants to read Mahesh's post, that would be lovely. And I'll listen to it, because I love him so much.
All right. It looks like Margaly had words.
You know me, I had to do it at least once. I had to not turn my mic on at least once. All I was saying was that I would read Mahesh's words, if that was okay with everyone. Believe me, CLF reaches far and wide, all the way to Ahmedabad in India, where I am a lone UU minister. Sometimes when I am lost and struggling personally or theologically, I just hang out with CLF online or just dash off an email to Reverend Meg pouring out my feelings. Just the feeling that there is a place called home on the web is a big relief. So in that spirit, I want to welcome the fellows. Thank you.
I mean, isn't it amazing to picture Mahesh connected to us right now? I mean, that is just like a miracle of the time that can happen. I know in the time I've been at CLF, the ugliness of online community has often become much clearer, including, you know, recruitment of young white men to horrible groups and all kinds of things that are really the shadow side. But I think this kind of connectedness it's just always a miracle to me, you know, that, and whether I've actually gotten to meet, but some people I will never meet in the flesh, and yet I feel such deep love for them.
Darby says, Darby Lockridge says, in today's scandal complaint response focused culture, I think it's so healthy to see someone transition out of position and into a new space as a good process. I'm grateful for Meg's work and eager to see what is coming. We are eager as well, Darby. I think we've all been, in my own theological speech, blessed by Meg, and I can't wait to see what new things await us. And Catherine Drew Jones was talking about the safety it feels, or the intimacy in CLF. It's kind of a double layer security. You're safe in your own space, as well as safe and beloved community. And I think that is just, that's true. CLF is a beloved community for so many of us, and it does feel safe to be able to be your full self here. Yeah.
Yeah, I wanted to just, you know, chime in. Pretty much as soon as I came on board, I learned that Reverend Meg was leaving. And, you know, of course, I would love more time to be with her as a supervisee. But I also think it's so important to learn about transitioning. It's transitioning out. It's important to learn about knowing when it's time to move on and make room, and how to do that, as Darby said, as a good process. So I'm grateful to be here also to learn from you, Reverend Meg, as you're doing that part of ministry.
Well, I was telling, I don't know, some friend or colleague or someone, that all of the outreach has been just incredibly kind, and blessings on your journey, and I'm happy for you. And I was like, but we've got months for everyone to get mad, and by the time I leave, they can be like, oh, I can't wait for her to be gone. And, you know, all the parts of grief. I mean, that's in a way why it's good to have time to really say, oh, well, this is part of it. And as I said in the CLF newsletter that went out today, you know, every transition is practicing for the big win that we all make at the end. And so practicing a good goodbye, as my friend Kate Tucker framed it, feels really important to me, and knowing when to get off the stage and when to stop. And so much has changed, will have changed in the 10 years that I've been here, technologically, institutionally. New models of leadership are emerging all the time that are so exciting. You know, maybe a team will come in. I mean, who knows what's going to happen? So I'm just really, I think we'll get to do it all together, and we'll all be learning the whole time. And that, you know, that we're closing, and I just want to say to close that I have learned so much more from the Learning Fellows than they will ever learn from me. Every single one of them. Just the hunger for good work, the willingness to do sometimes really odious tasks, sometimes delightful ones, you know, just the support for one another that I get to watch, the friendships that emerge, the vulnerability and willingness to be whole, authentic people is just keeps me inspired and happy. And in fact, when I was in Washington, D.C., that's why I started an internship program, because I was so depressed. I thought, I used to be excited about this work, and now I'm just bitter. I need to get some fresh energy in here. So I think rotating leadership in any kind of place is a good thing. Moving leadership along in any kind of congregation is important, that it should never be, oh, the only person who could ever do that is Margalee. That, you know, there just needs to be motion, and that's what we're doing. We're a religious movement. So thank you. I said in my letter, and I'll say it again, I've been incredibly, incredibly blessed and privileged to have this role. So next week, we're going to have the Commission on Institutional Change, and we'll probably have, I hope, a little bit of report back from Loretta too, but we'll spend more time on that. Margalee, it's so fun to have you back. I've missed one of you.
I know. I feel like I miss it too. But I was just, I know, like, we don't have a lot of time, but what is your sense? We are the Learning Fellows here today. What is your hope or your wish for the Learning Fellowship program at CLF as you transition out?
To me, the Learning Fellows program is the heart of CLF. The Learning Fellows provide a lot of the direct interaction with our membership, which is way too big for a minister or two. And new energy all the time. So my hope, you know, is that in some form it continues as one of CLF's great gifts, not only to CLF, but I think to Unitarian Universalism when I think, and the world, when I think of where the people have moved on to who have come through. Most are in bricks and mortar congregations, but they're also military chaplains, you know, Shauna Foster's working on a presidential campaign. You know, I mean, people get skills that are useful in all kinds of settings. And I think that we need more leadership pipelines within Unitarian Universalism. But this is, I think, a really important one. And if you just look at the folks who have come through, I think you'll see amazing leaders in our movement. So that's my hope. But, you know, Margalee, I'll be gone. At the last board meeting, they sent me out of the room and started talking, and I thought, this is how it's going to be. It's not my decision anymore. But I think the Learning Fellows are very beloved by the whole congregation and movement.
All right, that's a wrap, folks. Thank you so much. It was so good talking about CLF. Bye, everyone. Be well in Facebook land. Bye.
This has been an episode of The View. If you would like to learn more about the CLF, visit questformeaning.org.